You have one unheard message.
Hi, I was calling Current, the influencer marketing platform, but I think I just got redirected to a bunch of people listening to a podcast. Well, anyways, I was calling Current because I was told they could help get my brand set up on TikTok Shop and even build out an affiliate program of content creators promoting my brand and even have those content creators go on live streams and promote my product there. Wow, I could really use Current. I also heard that the brands they work with are making millions in sales. I guess I'll just go to their website at current.tech.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Coming up on episode 281 of Wheel Bearings, we've got the Ram 1500 Rebel, the Mazda 3 Turbo, buttons are better than screens, the rotary is finally back for the Mazda MX-30 plug-in hybrid, Toyota powers an AE86 with hydrogen, Mercedes is looking to ditch Mercedes wants to ditch its EV badges, we've got the winners of the North American Car, Truck, and Utility of the Year Award. The Corvette E-Ray is finally real, and I've got a conversation with Sanjay Ravi, the General Manager of Automotive and Transportation at Microsoft, to talk about the metaverse. All that and more coming up next. This is episode 281 of Wheel Bearings. I'm Sam Abul Salmon from Guidehouse Insights.
I am Nicole Wakeland from Let's Go Newsweek's Fast Women podcast today.
And I am Roberto Baldwin from Ars Technica.
And Nicole, I actually just saw you here in town a few days ago. You managed to successfully exit Detroit after the North American Truck of the Year Awards. After
I flew in the day that the FAA was like, nope, we're not playing today. And so it was, it was the strangest thing because I got onto the plane and everything's normal. It was like a really early flight, like 5 o'clock in the morning. And I sit down, I'm all ready to go. I got my little Diet Coke, I got my laptop open. I plug my little thing into the back of the headrest so I can watch the news. And it's like, flight's grounded. I'm like, wait, we did take off, right? I'm looking out the window. I'm like, nope, we're in the air. So I don't know how we like
squeaked out. You were one of the last ones to squeak out there.
I swear we must have been like, let those guys take off. She needs to hand out an award. Okay, now shut it down. And then they opened it back up sometime while I was in Detroit. Yeah, I got home no problem. I went hand out the North American Truck of the Year, which I think no one was surprised to see it went to the F-150 Lightning. That was my job.
Yeah, I mean, come on.
Well, it was an odd year for particularly for the truck category, because for North American Car and Truck of the Year, Car, Truck, and Utility of the Year.
Yes.
You know, they have the three categories, and this year there were literally only three trucks, and if I'm not mistaken, I think the third entry in there, they kind of had, you know, they, under normal circumstances, they might not have included the 2022 Chevy Silverado because it was just kind of a mild mid-cycle refresh.
Yeah, it was a tricky year because of exactly that. And, you know, I can't remember how far back it didn't used to be that utility and truck were separated at one point.
Yeah, it's only about 6 or 7 years ago.
Yeah, it's relatively recent thing that they've decided to do. And I guess when they decided to, I wasn't a juror at the time. And I guess when they decided, like, you know, we could run into a situation, not always all new trucks, enough new trucks to do this. They're like, no, we think we'll be fine. And we're like, well, this year's going to be a little bit weird, a little bit, you know, stretching things a little bit. So that I get to announce the Ford F-150 Lightning is the winner. I think, honestly, if I'd opened the envelope and it had said something else, I would have been shocked because the others are vehicles, but geez Louise, the F-150 Lightning is fantastic.
I'm shocked that the Lordstown Endurance didn't win.
Come on, man! It's early.
Are you? That was you who in the audience who went when I made the announcement. Yeah,
that was me.
What?
So the Kia EV6 won for utility, and the Acura Integra won for car, which is kind of cool. The Acura, because it was I'm going to mess up the years. They told me it's like the first time they've won an award in like 20 years or something. It's a very long time. Yeah, it was like the MDX or something like that. I mean, it's been a very, 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 very long time. And it's the first time a sedan has ever won for Acura. So they were excited. I love it when it's so cute. Like when everybody wins, you know, there's all the OEMs who have like top three finalists. They're sitting in the audience and, you know, you make the announcement. And of course, the winning OEM's like, yay, go us. Woohoo, yay. And everybody claps. But when Acura wins, it's like, wow. They're like screaming. Like it was so cute that everyone else was so reserved and Acura was just like lost their mind. It was really fun.
Let's party.
Let's party. Yeah. Well,
another unique aspect this year, you know, is of the 9 finalists across the 3 categories, 5 were battery electric vehicles. And in the utilities, all 3, you know, you had the Cadillac Lyriq, the Genesis GV60 and the Kia EV6.
Yep. Yeah. So it was, what I thought was neat about that is, you know, there's sort of this, I know, you know, love EVs, hate EVs, whatever, acceptance is growing, but it's still not, you know, people are still leery of EVs. You know, people who like, people who listen to the podcast, probably not so much. You, all of us, not so much because we're used to them. We see them all the time. We know them. We're comfortable with them. We know a lot about them. The general public, not so much. So to have that many EVs that were that good and worthy of getting the award and to bring that sort of to the public's, general public's attention a little bit more, like these are electric vehicles that are winning these awards and they were competing against a bunch of other electric vehicles, is sort of a neat thing for the industry, I think, and for EVs in general to sort of show an acceptance level and sort of progress that they've made to where it's no longer, there's an EV on the list. It's like, no, there's a whole bunch of them. Like it's, oh, it was like, whole bunch of EVs because they're just that good and they're that sort of normal in the market anymore.
Yeah, no, it was pretty impressive. Do you happen to know, I'm curious in the truck category, do you happen to know what the final tally was in terms of votes?
Okay,
points?
I do know the final tally, and I'm going to be cagey because I can't remember what they actually authorized us to release the full numbers or not, and I don't want to say something I'm not supposed to say.
Okay.
So I don't. I can't remember whether they said they were releasing just the total for what the F-150 got or all of them. So I'm gonna.
I know in the past they have, but I'm not gonna. I'm not going to try and get.
Yeah, there was some debate there. So let's just say the F-150 did quite well. And if I can confirm that the numbers are out there next week, I'll give you exact numbers and let you know. But yeah, I don't want to put that out there for that.
Yeah, I'm looking at the site.
And, did we put them up?
Well, it only has the number of votes for the winners. So
that's what I thought. Okay.
For the Lightning in Truck of the Year, it got 433 votes. By comparison, the Kia EV6 in utility got 258, and the Integra got 174, mm-hmm. which kind of implies that the Lightning was a runaway, and the car category was probably pretty close between the Integra, the Genesis G80 EV, and what was
the Nissan Z?
Nissan Z, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, that tells a lot just seeing the numbers, but I think they were debating not putting out the full numbers for each one this year. It looks like that's what they did. So we'll stick with that. I'll keep it secret.
All right.
Secret.
So, once you got back home, what were you, what have you been driving?
Not an EV for the first time in 3 weeks. I did not have an EV. I had the 2023 Mazda 3 2.5 turbo all-wheel drive hatchback with Premium Plus package.
Ooh.
Yeah. Whew. Okay. Which I really like. I like Mazdas as a rule. What I think Mazda does is they give you sort of a premium feel inside. They're very sort of sleek. They're nicely designed. They're warm. They're not sterile cars. They have nice features and they look and feel good. And they always have a little bit of a sportiness to it. You know, Mazda's big on the idea that you're not driving a car as an appliance to get from point A to point B. Sure, you need to do that, but you're going to enjoy that drive while you're doing it. And so Mazda tends to make the cars look like that in a sort of like the front seats aren't just flat seats. They're sort of like a bucket seat. So they hold you a little bit without being something that's going to squish you. Because there's a balance there between sporty bucket seats that hold you in place if you take a corner a little bit more aggressively to, oh dear God, I feel like I'm in a corset. Like, they're nice. I like how the ones in the Mazda 3 feel. So it's, and it's a sporty, you know, that sporty thing goes to the speed, to the acceleration. It handles well. I mean, you can take it on. We have a lot of twisty, turny roads back here. You can take it on those roads and have a little fun with it. And it just handles beautifully. I also got to do something that I love doing. We do for the New England Motor Press Association. We do a lot of, we have a winter vehicle of the year that we do. We have a bunch of different categories. So we get a lot of vehicles to really test because we get winter. Normally, this year we haven't had much winter, but finally we got some snow.
We got it all out here now.
I know, so, you got all the winter welcome. Weird California weather. So thanks for taking that off our plate. So we had a little bit of snow and ice. So it was the kind of the messy winter weather that people hate to drive in, because even though it wasn't deep snow, it was packed icy mess on the road. And so of course I did what I always do when the weather's like that, and I have a car ticket and drove it. And it handled beautifully. It really did handle well. It didn't have trouble. You know, you feel like you don't lose your grip. Like when you accelerate from a stop, there's this hill coming out of the grocery store where there's a bit of a hill and there's a stoplight. And if you get stopped in just the right spot, it can be a real bear to go up that, because you're just, the doesn't matter the car. They don't like it. It's the everything is just so to have you spin your wheels a little bit.
Physics will win every time.
Yes. And there's a spot on that hill where I'm like, oh, this is the physics spot. Yes. So I ended up stuck right in that spot, but I didn't get stuck. I just stopped. And when it was time to go and the light changed, I had no problem going. No wheel slip at all. And I could see other vehicles around me spinning their tires trying to get up this little hill.
Was it on winter tires or all season?
I was just going to look and see. I don't know whether on winters or all seasons, but I mean, I've done it in my own car in winter tires. I've had winter tires spin on that stupid hill. Nope, it doesn't say winter tires on my list.
Probably won't say on the Monroney, because it ships with all seasons, but I don't know if they the fleet company there put on.
Yeah, sometimes we get all seasons. Yeah. I mean, it is, and we do get a mix. Just because I have a car in the winter doesn't mean I'm going to get winter tires on it. So it might be all seasons on this. Again, it's all wheel drive. Maybe they put winters, who knows, but it did handle really well. And it's a fun car to drive. You know, it's quiet, even in the slushy rain mess that after the snow started to melt, and it's, that can be really loud driving around in that. It was a nice quiet ride. This is technically going to have five people. It's got a front seat and a back seat, but it's the back seat's really small. I mean, once you, even for me at 5'6", when I have the front seat pushed back to a point where I'm comfortable, sure, you could sit behind me, but I don't think Robbie could. Like, his knees would be squished.
Like, why? Why do you hate me?
Exactly.
Have you done this to me? What have
you
I done?
You would be smooshed in the back seat. So it's sort of like back seat in a pinch. Smooshed. Like, smooshed, Robbie. So it's not something, if you're going to have people in the rear seats a lot, that you really want to consider this. It's just a little bit too small. Even kids, like, the thing is, you think when you have, and my kids are long grown, but when kids sit in car seats, people seem to think, well, I can get a really small car because they're in a car seat. But if you've ever seen where the kids' feet actually hit in a car seat, because they're up higher and they're not down low, they will actually the toes of their shoes are right against the backs of the front seat. So it almost squishes their little feet too. So it's really something to consider. Like, okay, I have kids. Doesn't matter. No. Put your kids in the car seat in the back and see if they still sit, or if the way they are, that might actually be worse for them than for Robbie potentially.
And also kicking.
Yes. The kicking and how much you value your back seats looking like whatever the backs of your front seats looking like whatever your kids last walk through, whether it's mud or grass or salt or snow or whatever, just being coated on the backs of those seats.
Get the thing, like, we have this for our dogs. It's just a big thing we bought that just covers the entire back seat.
There is.
And it still has all the holes for the seat belts and stuff. So when, you know, so
yeah,
you can,
like, they do latch your dog in. I know people have those.
You should get that for your kid.
But a kid, somehow they have them you can put over the, like, over the seat backs, but, and you can put them like over the seats. But from experience with other parents, where the spots where the little things, the holes for the seat belts and everything to come through, you'd be surprised the amount of kid food and gunk that can just go directly into that little spot. So when you do take that off, it's now like it's all been concentrated right there.
Cheerios nasty. Find a way is what you're telling me.
Yes, Cheerios.
Like, once you latch them in, just tape it all in.
I know, just like duct tape it entirely.
Kid detritus will land somewhere.
Yes, somewhere. No matter what you do, the one spot
that
you haven't protected is like there's one square inch in the entire car that is revealed. That is exactly where all the nastiest stuff is going to go, right to that.
That's
one.
Where they're going
to
vomit.
That's like, how directly does that even happen? Yeah, it's going to be like on the front of the car. How did they get that up there? Well, you know, you didn't cover that spot.
Kids, so, by the way.
Yeah, and I still am not, you know, I'm not keen on the spinny dial for the Mazda infotainment system. I find it a little wonky to operate. Not my favorite infotainment system feature. I feel like I fight with it every time. And I say all the time, I know Mazda says that after a very short time that owners get very accustomed to it and they love it and say it's not a problem, becomes super intuitive. In the many times I've driven a Mazda, I have yet to reach that level of intuition. So it does not get easier for me. I'm stuck at a certain point, and that's where I apparently am going to stay.
And that's, I mean, also most people are plugging their phones in. So it becomes very like, you know, twisting and pushing and tapping. Well, not tapping, just to get to like, you know, your playlist. And then we go back to, to Google Maps and you're
But I did like that it didn't, I think I mentioned last week that on the steering wheel of the EQ, oh God, whatever it was, the EQ, whatever, S, thank you. I'm like, I'm having a blank. What was it? EQ... S last week, that it has little tiny touch pads like the size of your pinky nail that you can swipe your finger back and forth to change the volume. And I kept like turning the steering wheel and I would accidentally brush it and turn the volume all the way up and scare the daylights out of myself. This one just has an actual little toggle switch. I was like, thank you very much, Mazda, for actually putting a switch on the steering wheel to control that. That made me happy. I liked that. So, oh, and for pricing, we are looking at $35,300, so not crazy. Okay, delivery processing and handling fee, gentlemen?
$1,200.
Sam?
$1,290.
No, wait, you both lose. You can't go over, right?
No, no. Is it $995?
No, it was $1,065.
Ooh.
That was closest.
Ooh, an odd one.
Yeah, I know, $1,065, right? They were messing with you. Yep. So, yeah, so not still crazy exorbitant. I love it when they're under $1,000 now. Like, it's like, could be like $999. Yeah. I'm like, yes. So, yeah, so that, so you're looking.
It won't last.
No. So, and there are a couple little extras. There was snowflake white pearl paint for $400 and a rear, a stainless rear bumper guard that put another $135. So all told $36,895 for the 2023.
Pay money for white paint. Especially it's when not, Mazda has Robbie, the best red.
Robbie, yeah. It's not white. It's snowflake white pearl.
It has the word white in it.
You know what? Once it's covered with road salt, it's just white.
It's just white.
Right. Yeah. It did. The interior actually was prettier. It has these like sort of burgundy-ish red seats. I love the burgundy trim. It's just this really color that really pops, especially with the fact that it is white on the outside. You open the door and you see the red on the inside, and it's a really... It adds, again, that sort of a little bit of a luxury kind of appeal. Makes it look like your car's a little fancy.
Excellent.
There you go. There's your Mazda 3.
All right.
Mazda 3.
Robbie, apparently your BMW i7 you were supposed to have this week got broken by somebody else. So
I don't know exactly if it got broken by someone else. I just know that it's broken. I don't want to cast blame. It could have shown up broken. Could have happened.
Maybe BMW broke it.
Maybe BMW broke it. Maybe, I don't know. I don't want to, because there's only like two other people in the Bay Area.
Cast dispersions on your fellow automotive journalists.
Yeah, I don't want to be like, you know who did this?
That guy. Did it. Dang it.
I always forget about people. I guess there's people in Sacramento who I always forget about because who remembers Sacramento really?
Well, I had a bright red Ram Rebel 1500, a Ram 1500 Rebel, which is, you know, it's a fairly standard, in terms of size, it's a fairly standard sized, you know, full size pickup, crew cab, short bed. You know, it's a good looking truck. But you know, they come standard with the 3.6 liter Pentastar V8. The one I had the optional 5.7 liter Hemi with e-torque, which is their 48 volt mild hybrid system. And despite having a degree of hybridization in there, this was a thirsty beast.
No, I'm shocked.
Highway driving, I was able to get it up to about just over 14 miles per gallon.
On the highway? Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
Overall combined was about 12.7, which is, I mean, fortunately, you know, gas prices have moderated around here. They're regular is about $3.50, $3.60 a gallon around here. But that's still a lot of gas to be consuming.
I remember when gas was like six something here, and I would see people flying around in their giant full-size trucks with like Hemi's just like doing like 80 on the freeway. I'm like, what is wrong with you? Do you know? Slow down.
Are you crazy?
How much money you're spending? You're only going to get there like 30 seconds quicker. Chill out.
Yeah. So, the 2015, 2023 Ram 1500 with four-wheel drive and the Hemi V8 is EPA rated at 17 city, 19 combined, 22 highway.
So you're a little low.
Of course, you know, the Rebel is the off-roady version of this. You know, it's got all-terrain tires. It sits a little bit higher than the standard 1500. So, I wouldn't expect it to hit 19, but, you know, 14 is definitely... That's a thirsty beast,
yes.
Which is, you know, this is a big part of why Stellantis is, you know, making such a big push to finally go electric, because corporate average fuel economy requirements are continuing to increase every year, and Stellantis and Fiat Chrysler before that has been at the very bottom of that list for pretty much the last decade, and the gap seems to have grown. I think last year they were at like 21.3 miles per gallon combined, when the requirement was about 25, I think, for the fleet average.
Wow! Like,
so
most of Tesla's money came from FCA.
Yeah,
pretty much.
Most of their profits, at least, came from FCA. FCA has bought a lot of credits from Stellantis or from Tesla.
Yeah.
Aside from fuel economy, this is a really good truck. The one I had was equipped with the optional four-wheel air spring suspension system. It's got the 8-speed automatic transmission that is standard across all of these vehicles. It had the optional electronic shift on demand transfer case. So you could, there's just, you know, a knob and a couple of buttons that you can use to shift it between two-wheel drive high, four-wheel drive high, and four-wheel drive low. You do have to come to a stop before you go from four high to four low. And that, surprisingly enough, is only a $195 option. The air suspension is $1,800.
That's a lot.
This one also had the optional 33-gallon fuel tank, which, you know, at that fuel economy, it's probably a wise investment at $445.
You're going to appreciate that, yeah.
It had the technology group with the heads-up display for $1,100. The night edition for $1,895, which gets you a black Ram grill, 18-inch gloss black wheels, and black front bumper with black plate, and matte black grill with Ram badge, which it says twice here. So you get the black Ram. Oh, you get the Ram grill, the black grill badge, and the matte black grill with Ram badge for $1,800.
I'm sorry, who's on first? Okay, if you say
that,
so.
Grill, vamp, okay.
I didn't have the advanced safety group, so no adaptive cruise control or lane keep assist, but it did have the big 12-inch Uconnect touchscreen system and the GT package for $3,000. All in, first, let me just say, like I said, this thing actually has surprisingly good ride comfort considering the off-road capability that it has. It didn't have any kind of running boards or step up, so it's pretty much, even for me, you know, I was grabbing the either the steering wheel or the grab handle on the A pillar to climb up into this thing. But the seats are really comfortable. There's a ton of room in the back seat. You know, it's like limo size room in the back seat of these modern crew cab trucks.
So, so you can like just pick people up to help you pay for gas. Like, yeah, hey, you need exactly. a ride somewhere.
Can you ride? Give me 10 bucks. I'll give you a ride.
Or, you know, you put your kid seats in there, and there is no way that, you know, unless your kid is exceptionally tall, that they're going to be kicking you in the back of the seat, because we're talking a large amount of room there.
It's slightly roomier than the Mazda 3.
It is.
You could put a Mazda 3 back there.
You could pretty much put a Mazda 3 back in there.
In the back seats. Just tuck it right in there.
let's see what else. This one also had the trifold tonneau cover, the spray and bed liner, all kinds of other stuff.
Bad.
It feels very premium inside. And the Ram trucks, you know, for a long time have had a premium feel that you just don't get from GM or Ford or Toyota or Nissan. It feels more expensive.
And they ride so much nicer than
they really do.
I mean, you know, as a daily driver, I think I would probably prefer to have a Ram truck over anything else just based on the ride quality, although it will use more fuel than any of the competitors. So
you'll be comfier and riding in a nicer vehicle, but you'll pay for it.
Yes.
Like 30 miles an hour everywhere.
And if you want one equipped like this this flame red Ram Rebel that I had, you're looking at $80,555.
Ouch.
Oh, trucks are so expensive.
Ouch.
Just buy a Maverick. I'm just going to keep saying.
Yeah. No, you're absolutely. I mean, you could buy four Mavericks for the price of this thing.
Four Mavericks. Cheap Maverick and then like one really expensive Maverick and Honda Accord, I guess.
You could get three. You could get the base XL hybrid for great fuel economy. You could get the fully loaded Tremor, and a mid level XLT. No matter what kind of mood you're in, you'd have a Maverick that fits your
mood. Could just pick the Maverick for the moment and still come out ahead on price.
Right. And between the three of them, you've got more payload than this truck has.
Just hook them all up together.
Yeah. Well, no, I mean, just distribute the payload across the beds of the three trucks.
Just a tow bar for each. Get two tow bars. What are you doing? God, I'm taking my choo-choo train, Maverick choo-choo train, to the to the Home Depot.
Well, no, I think in terms of towing, the Ram would probably still beat it. But just payload, for your bags of mulch, distribute bags of mulch across the three Mavericks and be able to carry more bags of mulch than you could put in the Ram. So, for the same price, you get more mulch carrying capability with three Mavericks than you do with a single.
And if you just take one Maverick to the Home Depot and you have to go back and forth like three times, you still will save
you
money.
You still going to get out ahead on gas. Yeah.
Exactly. Yes.
Yep.
Any guesses on the delivery charge?
$17.95.
Oh, I was going to go $12.95.
It's actually $18.95 now.
Wow.
Yeah. So it is not cheap. But
you're also paying $80,000 for a truck. So at that point, nothing matters.
Yeah, I mean, you're like, here's more money.
I mean, you can get a base, Ram 1500 starting at about $37,000.
Right.
Which is still, an exceptional truck, only slightly more fuel efficient. So, aside from the fuel economy, this is a really nice truck to drive. So, that's the Ram Rebel, Ram 1500 Rebel with Hemi V8.
There you go.
You have one unheard message.
Hi, I was calling Current, the influencer marketing platform, but I think I just got redirected to a bunch of people listening to a podcast. Well, anyways, I was calling Current because I was told they could help get my brand set up on TikTok Shop and even build out an affiliate program of content creators promoting my brand and even have those content creators go on live streams and promote my product there. Wow. I could really use Current. I also heard that the brands they work with are making millions in sales. I guess I'll just go to their website at current.tech.
Our bodies come in different shapes and sizes, so doesn't it make sense that our weight loss plans should too? That's the beauty of Noom. They build a personal plan that factors in dietary restrictions, medical issues, and other personal needs so your plan works for you. Noom doesn't restrict or shame when you want to treat yourself. Their flexible program focuses on progress instead of perfection. You don't have to give up carbs or anything. And with their daily lessons, you can learn something new about your food choices every day. After just a few days of using the app, I learned how to recognize cues for overeating and how to choose the right foods to feel full. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
All right, let's get into some of the items of the week. We already talked about Nattoy.
We did.
Going back to your comments about the control dial in the Mazda 3.
Let me be clear before you even start this. It's not the buttons. It's a spinny dial in the Mazda that I object to. It's not buttons. Okay, continue. Okay.
All right.
Well, you don't want to be on the wrong side of history.
I'm okay with buttons. I just don't like spinny dials. Okay.
There was a new study that was done by the Swedish car magazine V. Billigar that looked at 12 different models of cars, including a 2005 Volvo as a baseline. And they had a series of 12 tasks that the drivers had to do, and they measured how long it took the drivers to do those tasks. You might be surprised to learn that it took longer on cars that had only touchscreens than on cars that had buttons. And in fact, that 2005 Volvo did it the fastest.
Of course it did, because you don't have to, you're not looking for something. You're not trying to get your finger not to hit the wrong thing.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
Like putting my arm and putting my hand up and bracing it on the screen so I can hit a button.
That's I do that too. If it's a big screen and I'm trying to do something, and all things being equal, just give us old school buttons.
Yeah,
but please don't give me a rotary dial.
Yeah, I misread it. It was actually only four tasks, they measured how long it took to do them in time and how far the car traveled during that time, at 68 miles an hour. They did this on an empty airstrip. The 2005 Volvo, it took 10 seconds to complete the four tasks in 1,000 feet. The best of the modern cars took 14 seconds, and the worst took over 20 seconds.
So that's double, right?
2,000 feet. Yeah.
Wow. Yep. See, that's bad.
There's just things you don't need to do with the stupid... Play your map there. Yeah, fine. Have a couple things there, but for the most part, I just want to adjust the volume. I just want to adjust my climate controls.
Mm-hmm. It is too much. And there's also, there is just too much there. I mean, we don't need all the stuff that's on the infotainment. Like, how often are there apps and stuff on there and things that you can do that I have no need to do that while I'm driving. I don't need to check the price of my stocks while I'm driving to the grocery store. I don't need to know, this can wait. There's a lot that can wait too. So it's just stuff that you have so much information on there. That's part of what makes it harder to use. It's four things to touch. Boom, boom, boom. You get faster at it.
And the things that you do need to do, like adjust your climate control, having to do that in a touchscreen display where you have to look at it, is to hit those touch targets on the screen, it's just a fundamentally bad idea.
Yeah.
You know, just you know, leave a couple of knobs, you know, for temperature and fan speed, and a volume knob, and, you know, then you're good.
I agree. I mean, I just, my first choice buttons, my second choice touchscreen, my last choice.
Whatever Mazda gave you.
Whatever Mazda gives me. I'm sorry, Mazda. I love your cars. I love everything about them, but
so
I hate
good.
That spin dial.
Yeah, that little spin dial is kind of a pain in the ass.
It slays me. I hate it. It dies.
All right. Let's stick with Mazda for a minute. Do you remember
Nicole
the Mazda MX-30?
I do remember the MX-30.
I think they sold about 500 of them last year. A little more than 500 last year.
Woohoo!
You know, because, you know, it was such a great value, you know, and had a whole 100 miles of battery range. Well, at the time when they launched it, they said, yeah, this isn't the only version of this that we're going to have, of the MX-30. You know, they said we're going to have a plug-in hybrid version. And, you know, it's been rumored for many, many, many years that Mazda would bring back the Wankel rotary engine for its upcoming electrified vehicles. And now they've finally done it. For now, it's only available in Europe. There's no indication of whether we'll ever get it here in the U.S. Or even if we'll ever get any more MX-30s here in the U.S. I believe they are going to ship some more MX-30s here. And actually there are going to be plug-in hybrids from Mazda on other models coming here this year, in fact. I'm not sure if this is one of them. But they brought back the rotary as a range extender for the MX-30. Strangely, what they did, it's an interesting configuration because the nice thing about a rotary engine is it's really power dense. It's really compact for the amount of power it produces. And so the way they've got this packaged, they've got the drive motor, they've got the gears, the final drive ratio that sends the torque to the wheels. There's the generator, and then there's the rotary engine on one end, and these are all in line together, and it all fits in there, you know, in less space than a normal internal combustion engine would take. It's an 865cc rotary with, I think, like 78 horsepower or something like that, if I recall correctly. It runs the generator to keep the battery charged so you can keep driving. So once the battery is depleted, you can keep driving on this thing. But for some strange reason, unlike when BMW did this with the i3 and did their range extended version, they took a little boxer motorcycle engine and put it in the back. But they kept the same size battery. Although BMW only put like a 2.5 gallon gas tank in there, so you couldn't actually go very far. You know, it was basically really only for emergencies.
Yeah.
For some reason, Mazda cut the battery size almost in half for this thing, for the MX-30. So it went from a 33 kilowatt hour battery to only 17.8 kilowatt hours. And it's rated at, I think, like 85 kilometers of driving range. So a little over 50 miles of driving range. So you went from 100 to 50 miles of electric driving range. And now you have the rotary to keep it going. Although at least it's got a 10-gallon gas tank. So, I don't know. Any thoughts on this thing? Is this going to save the MX-30?
No.
No.
It's not a fun, it doesn't feel like a Mazda. That's the thing. I think you guys asked me a while ago, like, what's the difference between, like, why is the M30 not work, but the Mini SE works? I mean, because the Mini SE feels like it's a fun car. It feels like a Mini. The MX-30 just feels like something Mazda threw together and didn't put that Mazda-ness in there.
Yeah, I think the same thing. I just don't think it doesn't have the fun of a Mazda. It feels like they just, okay, we got to do this, so we're going to do it. Here you go. We did it.
Yeah.
Which is disappointing. Sad. It is.
I like that little cork. I like the cork interior, even though eventually it's going to be like a dirty cork interior.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, it's going to be
so
filthy.
I just like that little thing. I'm like, oh, and it has a little suicide door in the back, and I'm like, oh, it's like the i3.
It looks so cute. It looks really cute.
Just don't let your kids inside this thing.
Yeah, your kids are going to destroy it. It's got like felt, kind of like that felt sort of bits in there, and it's got cork bits in there, and it all looks beautiful. And you know how we were talking about the kids and the sticky fingers and the getting stuff everywhere. Nightmare fuel, this car, if that's your problem.
Yeah, I mean, the designers probably had a great time with this thing. But, you know, from a practical standpoint as an owner, it might be maybe not so great.
Yeah.
All right. Let's move on then. Toyota's got another different solution. You know, they've been experimenting. I mean, Toyota's been big on hydrogen fuel cells for a long time, and they're still pushing that with the Mirai and with heavy trucks. But the last year or two, they've also been playing around with internal combustion and hydrogen. They've had a GR Corolla that they've been racing in Japan that runs on hydrogen. It's fueled by hydrogen. And now they have built an old – they got an old AE86, you know, which the old Celica coupe from the, what, early 80s, I think it was. Yeah, I think it was early 80s. They have outfitted it to run on hydrogen. And it still has the classic 4AG four-cylinder engine in there, but they put a hydrogen tank in there, and it's burning hydrogen. So it's not a fuel cell; it is burning hydrogen. What do you think about this idea?
I remember the Hindenburg. No.
Oh my gosh!
No, you know what? No, I trust Toyota to be able to build a car. It's not to explode. I mean, all cars are essentially. You're making, you know, heat and energy in order to push it forward. So that wasn't a fair. It's still fun. It's a funny thing to say, but I in Japan and Korea, hydrogen makes sense. In the United States, still not so much. I would love it if we had a really nice hydrogen infrastructure, because then you're like, oh, I just plug it in, it charges up or fuels up, and then I get on my day, and the only thing I'm spitting out is water. But we don't. And Toyota hasn't done anything to make that network better, which is, you know, you can't push it without, you know, other than partnering, but not putting any money in. Partnering without any money is just like, hey, this is my friend Phil. He wrote a book. Oh, you're going to help pay for. No. I just want to tell you about Phil and his book. Anyway, let me tell you about the Prius.
Yeah. I think that, like, the whole hydrogen thing is like a nifty, cool idea, but. I mean, we can't even get the EV thing. Let's get that thing figured out, since we're kind of all in on that, I think, or most of us are, except for Toyota, who is very much like, no, we're not going just that route and only that route. It is not the future. There are other futures. So, I mean, I admire the idea of going to hydrogen, but there's still a lot of, there's some issues there. You know,
We're up to 53 hydrogen stations in California now.
Oh, wow. Well, never mind.
Well, forget it. Problem solved.
Problem solved.
You can. There's even a hydrogen station in near Reno, north of Lake Tahoe. Where is this? Oh, it's in Truckee. That's where it is. It's in Truckee.
So Lake Tahoe. So yeah. You know, for trucks that are going up over the mountain, and then you get to Reno, you're like, oh no, now what?
Now you got to turn around and just roll back down the hill until you get back to Truckee.
I guess
so. Just let it roll.
What's uphill to Truckee from Reno?
Oh, is it? Okay.
Yeah, Truckee's Lake Tahoe, essentially.
Oh my gosh, we have a hydrogen fueling station? I think we don't. Oh, no, wait. We don't. Never mind.
I was going to say, call in a Mirai. It's a
we
nice
don't.
Car.
The only thing we have are three CNG. Look, there's this that got a random website from the government that lists how many there are.
The Alternative Fuels Data Center?
Yes.
Yeah, that's the one I'm looking at. That's my usual reference for finding where all these oddball stations are.
We got nothing. We got some propane. You need some propane. We got propane. We got some CNG. But, yeah, we don't even have biodiesel here.
What happened with bio? That was such a big deal in the early 2000s. Like, oh, it smells like French fries. No, it doesn't. But
it didn't. The you know what? The movie theater near us had a vehicle they had that ran on the leftover, like it had somehow used the grease from their violators to do a biodiesel thing. And then remember that they had like a wrap that was all these like French fries on their car.
Yeah, they have a biodiesel like fueling station near here.
Of course they do, because you're in California.
Yeah, we're like, yeah, whatever.
You got all the fueling, whatever it is. They're like, sure,
everything
bring it
you
on.
Want.
We'll build
what
one.
Do you want? We'll build one.
We'll build you one.
We'll build at least one and see what happens. That's our thing. You know what? We'll make one. Let's see what happens.
It might
works
not
cool
go anywhere,
if it doesn't,
but we're going to build one.
For the four people who still own it, come on out.
Well, there are now over 50,000 EV charging locations, public EV charging locations, with 129,000, almost 130,000 charging ports. So we're making a little progress there.
There is none anywhere near me. There's literally none anywhere.
Well,
they're all at my house.
Hawaii. There's one in Hawaii.
Yeah.
There's one in Hawaii, according to this, and everything else in California.
Yeah. We are making progress, though, with hydrogen, because there are now more hydrogen stations than there are liquefied natural gas stations. There's only 51 LNG stations.
Well, so. See? Okay, so we made a commitment to something, and it's not liquefied natural gas.
All right. Let's see. Mercedes-Benz apparently is planning to ditch the EQ badge, possibly as soon as the end of 2024. Automakers have been bringing out these special, sub brands for their EVs over the last several years. And I guess the question is, as these brands go all electric, it's like the thing, if everybody's special, then nobody's special. Do we actually need special EV badges for EVs if everything is an electric vehicle?
It's funny. It was that way with hybrids too. Do you remember early hybrids? Not even plug-ins, just hybrids had like, you couldn't miss them because it's like the logo's green or light blue and there's leaves and it's pretty and we're in nature. And they're like, wait, everybody has one of these. Let's back off on that a little bit. So it kind of makes sense. There's a point where it's like, this is no longer new and different and exciting. So why are we making this the highlight of the badge?
And particularly for Mercedes, the way they've done it is kind of confusing, because in the past, with the gas models, you've got the S class and you've got the GLS, so the GL something, those were the SUVs, and then you had A, B, C, E, and S class for the cars, and GLA and GLB and GLC and E and S. And now you've got EQS and EQS SUV. It's getting kind of confusing.
Evidenced by the fact I couldn't even remember what I was driving last week, other than it began with an EQ, and I had to look at our spreadsheet from last week. Like it is confusing.
Soon everything from Audi will be an e-tron. Do we even need the special badging anymore? I'd say probably not.
Yeah, even if you put. Say S class E or whatever, but the EV branding is going to go away for everyone at some point. Everyone's going to have their like, oh, you know what? It doesn't matter. It's an EV.
The company I hope does it first is Toyota though.
I just want
them to get rid of BZ.
I want Toyota just to come in and be like, here's the RAV4.
Yeah.
And then very quietly say,
really quiet. Really. Yeah. I that BZ. And it's the way it's written. It's like, what is it? Lowercase B, capital Z, or lowercase X. Every time I
think it's uppercase X.
I don't even know. I just make it stop trying to mess with me with the nomenclature on your vehicles.
And I think the lowercase B is actually supposed to be superscripted.
Yes.
Which
is not happening for me. I'm like, no, you'll get a lowercase B and you'll be happy with it because that's all I can manage.
You'll be happy if you even get that much.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
then Subaru's already done it. They're like, Solterra.
I know. Go Subaru. It's just a car.
It's just a car. Solterra.
I love it.
It's the sun. It's the earth. It's an EV. Everyone's really excited about it. We're sorry that Toyota didn't do a better job with it.
Yeah, well, there's that. Yeah, details.
Subaru knows it's of all the automakers, Subaru knows it. Like, knows and connects with its drivers more than anyone, I think.
Yeah, definitely.
Solterra, we're like, yay! Here's a dog in the back. Woohoo!
Just give him a puppy and everybody will love it.
Yeah, just throw a dog in it, make an ad, call it Love. There, you'll sell it.
Love. Love, son, dog, sold.
Yep.
All right. Speaking of knowing and connecting with its customers, Chevrolet. So this episode, we're recording on Sunday, but it's not actually going to come out till Tuesday morning because the information we're talking about now is under embargo till then. And it's the 2024 Corvette E-Ray, the worst kept secret probably in the history of Corvette.
Correct.
So the E-Ray, if you haven't been paying attention, is a hybrid.
Bum bum.
Yay.
Any thoughts?
It's fine. That's all we'll drive. That's nice.
I can't, I can't get past the typo that's highlighted in red when I brought this open in my press release. The removable roof coupe. I can't get, all I can see is this typo.
I didn't even notice that.
It got highlighted in red because of how I opened it up. Like my document's like, that is a misspelling. Okay.
Yeah. So the Corvette E-Ray, they took the wide body look from the Z06. So it's got the Z06 wide body, but in place of the black trim pieces in the grill and the rear fascia and on the side scoops, those are all body color now. So it's all body color. The only real visual difference from the Z06 is the wheels, which are these sort of twisted five-spoke wheels, and the exhausts, which have the outboard quad exhausts instead of the center quad exhaust that the Z06 has. So it's got the same exhaust as the standard Stingray. And the engine is the 495 horsepower small block LT2 from the Stingray performance package, or the Z51 package, I guess it is. And then they added 160 horsepower electric motor to the front axle, just a single motor. So there's no electric drive on the rear, no dual motors like the Acura NSX had for torque vectoring, just a single electric motor. And then a lithium ion battery in the, center tunnel between the seats. It's a 1.9 kilowatt hour battery that, according to Chevy, will let you go, if when it's fully charged, you can go about 3 to 4 miles on electricity, and up to a speed of 45 miles an hour. And they have, you know, whereas in a Prius or other Toyotas with hybrid, they have an EV mode button. In the Corvette, they call it the stealth mode button. So you can sneak back into your neighborhood on electric drive, you know, when you're coming home late at night or leaving early in the morning without waking up the neighbors. Interestingly, one of the questions that came up during the briefing call the other day was whether the battery was the Ultium battery technology that they're using on all the new EVs. And they said, no, it's not the Ultium battery, because the development of this car predates the start of the Ultium program, which seemed like an odd statement.
Oh, really?
Because Ultium has been going on for a long time, which means that this thing, you know, is
7 years
on a really
ago.
Long time.
They're like, hey, wow. Let's put a hybrid, a Corvette. Okay, and it's going to take 10 years.
Yeah.
All right, we're on it.
Well, which is really odd because mechanically, it's not as complex as like a Prius hybrid. You know, basically, mm-hmm. you're just adding an electric motor and some half shafts to the front axle and the battery. You know, the rest, you know, you don't have this, you're not trying to integrate it into the transmission like you do on a lot of hybrids. So I'm not sure quite why it took so long, but it's here. You know, the starting price is going to be for the coupe is going to be $104,500, I think. It's $104,000 and change. With dealer markups, it'll probably be about $150,000. goes on sale later this year. It has roughly the same performance as a Z06. So total output is 655 horsepower and actually more torque than the Z06. I think I got to find the number here. It's like 570 foot-pounds of torque. So it's actually more torque than the twin cam V8 in the Z06. Mm-hmm. 0 to 60 is going to be about 2.5 seconds, they say, which is roughly the same as the Z06.
So why would you get this one?
Why would you get this over a Z06?
Yeah.
If you want all-weather driving capability, you want all-wheel drive.
Yeah.
It's the all-wheel drive that you're getting this one for.
Yeah. It's like the same price as the Z06.
Yeah. Yeah, same.
It's actually,
same,
wait,
same
it's actually
price,
cheaper.
Same performance.
It's actually cheaper than the Z06.
Yeah.
It's $1,000
or so
cheaper.
And it'll probably be slightly more fuel efficient than a Z06.
Okay.
So
you get all-wheel drive for the same money.
So you get all-wheel. So it's basically for your all-wheel. So it's literally all-wheel drive. The E part is kind of like meh.
Yeah,
you get 3 miles. Come on.
And so like the E part, I'm like, wait. I was somehow when I reading it, my brain went more to the E part than the all-wheel drive part. But I'm like, no, really, the E part's meh. The all wheel drive part, yay.
But you can't, but you can leave the neighborhood without waking up your neighbors too.
Why would you do that?
Stealth.
Why would you do that? Why Stealth. Wouldn't you like
I'm
you
a good person.
You aren't, Robbie, you lie. No, you I'd wake up my neighbors.
You're not very courteous, Nicole.
I'm a terribly not courteous. No, actually, I feel super guilty every time I have a loud car in an early flight. I'm like hitting the start button and sort of apologizing and like, sorry.
The other thing is the E-Ray will be available as a convertible, which the Z06 is not. The Z06 okay. is move only.
So another selling point. Okay.
And the E-Ray for that $104,295 base price includes Brembo carbon ceramic brakes as standard equipment.
Okay, so there's an extra little...
It's a better value.
It's a better deal. Yeah.
You do get, on the E-Ray, it does come with Michelin Pilot Sport all-season tires, a standard. But you will be able to opt for Pilot 4S summer tires. So if you really want to take advantage of that performance, what you would probably be better off doing... In fact, I think just in general, what you're better off doing is just getting the summer tire package... And then an extra set of wheels and some winter tires. Because if you're going to drive it all year round, you know, 670 horsepower on, you know, or 655 horsepower on snow or ice, just not a good thing with all season tires, even with all
Not
just,
good.
Just
not
get
good
some
at
proper
all.
Tires.
Yes.
So skip the all seasons, get the Pilot 4S summer tire package and an extra set of wheels and some winter tires, and you're good to go.
And there's your weekly PSA to buy winter tires if you live where it's cold.
Yes, absolutely.
Every time.
So that's the 2024 Chevrolet Corvette E-Ray coming probably sometime later this summer.
Yeah, same price.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's the better deal.
It is the better deal.
Get a little extra, something. And some better brakes. I'm a big fan of brakes.
Braking is good. Braking is good. It's important stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. All right.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise. Having fun in the sun or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5HETIDE.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5HETIDE.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
Did you know you can support Wheel Bearings directly? Head to patreon.com/wheelbearingsmedia and you can become a patron today. Your contributions will help fund the platforms and tools we use to bring the podcast to you. And exclusives and improvements are already on the way thanks to your generosity. So if you want to be part of an automotive podcast like no other, head to patreon.com/wheelbearingsmedia. So we got a couple of questions, a couple of listener questions before we wind up from Adam J. In Mastodon. So what's the deal with the Cadillac Lyriq delays? Do we think it's supply issues of production problems or production problems like software? I think it's
supply.
I think it's actually both.
Really?
I think that there are software issues too.
What makes you think that? Did you hear something, Sam?
Nothing specific, but the Lyriq is the first of GM's vehicles to shift over entirely to a Qualcomm compute platform for the ADAS, as well as the infotainment system.
Okay.
And they've basically had to rewrite the entire ADAS system, including Super Cruise, for this thing. And I know, you know, when we did the launch drive program last June in Park City, Super Cruise was not functional yet. They had not pushed out that update. And they said at that time that it was going to be coming out later in the year. My guess is they're probably still having some issues with that. And they don't want to put too many of these out. I think they've only delivered, by the end of the year, they had only delivered something like 140 of these. And my guess is... probably all of them are to GM employees. I would guess that none of these have gone to actual retail customers. They're probably still playing around with the software, trying to get the software right before they really ramp up. Plus, I know they have also had some issues ramping up production at the Lordstown Ultium battery plant. So that may be also a contributing factor. But I think the software is likely a bigger issue with the Lyric.
They probably don't want all the articles about software like that Volkswagen had to deal with.
Yeah.
Because once all those cars went out and they were essentially telling people, hey, we know the software sucks.
Yeah.
Just it'll be cool. It'll be cool. And it took like a year for everything to get fixed.
And even without Super Cruise, you know, when we drove it back in June, you know, it had some pretty major bugs in the infotainment software and in the cluster and everything. You know, and so I think they probably, I know that they've had some updates since then, I would guess that there's probably still some issues that they're dealing with. And then the last question, also from Adam J., was just read this advice about not using your hazard lights in low visibility conditions. Must admit, it's the first time I've heard of this in 30 years of driving.
I had always been told that, actually.
To not use your hazard lights?
To not use the hazard lights when you're driving. And the reason I'd always been told that was one of those dadisms. I think it was one of those things my dad told me when I was like first learning to drive, that people do it because they think I think that's kind of what this story says. You'll see me, the flashing light lets you see that I'm ahead of me if visibility is bad. But it also confuses people, and people think if your hazards are on, are you in the breakdown lane? Oh my God, have I veered into the breakdown lane? Mm-hmm. Like, are you stopped in front of me in traffic? It causes confusion and it mixes people up to whether you're hitting your brakes. Like, are you slowing down and braking? Or are you driving at speed with your hazards? It's supposed to confuse. And I had always been told no. And I knew that in some states it's actually illegal to do it.
Yeah, I wasn't aware it was illegal, but it does make sense that you would not want to drive with your hazards on, because
visibility. And low visibility. If it's just like a nice day, it's a nice, beautiful day, and like you're having an issue, stay in the right lane, put your hazard on.
Right. Like if you're genuinely having a problem. Yeah.
Yeah. If you're trying to, if you're like half a mile from a rest area or an off ramp, and you're creeping along slowly, trying to get to someplace safer. Put your hazards on in that scenario. If the visibility is that low that you need hazards, you should probably just be pulling over anyway.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, that's the other part of it. If it's so bad that you think people can't see you without your hazards on, then perchance you should get off the road, find a safe place to wait out whatever the issue is,
Don't deviate from what people anticipate. Don't be the person who's like, I'll just let everyone go at the stop sign. No, just go when it's your turn. Just, don't put your hazard lights in low visibility, because that's not what people are used to. They're used to seeing lights. Turn your lights on, which you should have your lights on whenever your windshield wipers go on or visibility goes low. But also, just drive. Don't do anything weird. Don't be like, I'm helping people. No, that does not help people. You're making
predictable.
Be predictable. Predictability is very important. And I know. I don't know if I told the story. I had a friend on a motorcycle, and sometimes people are like, just go. If you have a motorcycle and it's not your turn, you're like, no. You go, because everyone else at the stop sign or four-way stop is waiting for you. They're not waiting for me to go. And if you don't go, they're like, I'm just going to go, because it's not, and my friend, he would just take his hands off the motorcycle handlebars and just stand, just like, nope. And just put his hands on his hip until the person whose turn it was to go.
My daughter's, it's her biggest pet peeve about, she goes to school in Wisconsin and she learned how to drive here in the Northeast. And she said, everyone's too damn nice. They're always waiting. Like, no, don't. You're supposed to go. It's your turn. Don't let me go. You go. And then I go where the guy on the other side of me gets. No. She's like, this dang Midwestern politeness. Stop it. No.
If you both hit the stop sign at the same time, fine. You can wave someone on.
Right. But otherwise,
don't deviate from what is
follow what, the what prescribed order of operations.
Yeah. Or, if you're sitting, at a red light and, there's a little bit of a gap in front of you and somebody is trying to pull out of a parking lot or something like that, wave them in, give them the gap, let them slide in front of you, things like that. Though, that's perfectly okay. But if there's, in normal situations, like you said, like at a four-way stop or something like that, if you got there first, you go first. It's as simple as that.
Yep.
Do That's what easy. People expect of you.
And if two cars get to the intersection first at the same time, the one most furthest to the right gets right of way. They go
that
first,
the
and
rule.
You go clockwise around the intersection.
Mm-hmm. I knew that too. I paid attention a little bit in driver's ed.
All right. And with that, got one more thing that I'm going to be tacking on here on the end, which is an interview I did with Sanjay Ravi, who's the director of automotive operations at Microsoft. So he leads all the stuff that Microsoft does with automakers and suppliers. We talked about how companies are using their Azure cloud platform and stuff, some interesting stuff that Microsoft is doing with Fiat around the metaverse. So that will be coming up here. But for that, we're all going to say goodbye.
See ya.
Bye.
I am talking today with Sanjay Ravi, who is the General Manager of Automotive Mobility and Transportation at Microsoft. Sanjay, welcome to Wheel Bearings. Great to talk to you today.
Sam, thanks for having me. It's a pleasure to connect with you today.
So, at least in recent years, Microsoft is not typically a brand that's been that associated with the automotive space, at least not so much since the early days of Ford Sync. What is your group, your organization within Microsoft doing? What do you lead at Microsoft?
So Sam, my group is responsible for the industry business at Microsoft. So looking at all things movement of people and goods. So that means it's the automotive, mobility, and transportation parts of the business we have at Microsoft. And we are focused on working with our customers, partners, and also all the internal stakeholders across engineering, marketing, to bring the best value we can to our mobility customers. So that's the focus the team has.
So for Microsoft, who are those customers? Is that automakers? Is that suppliers? Who's the customer for what you're producing today?
So it is both the OEMs, the tier one suppliers, the supplier ecosystem. So it covers the entire breadth of the automotive and mobility value chain.
And, I mentioned that, I think the last time that most people thought about Microsoft was probably, in the late 2000s, when Mark Fields in 2007 at CES. It's what 16. It'll be 16 years ago in a couple of weeks from the time we're recording this. Stood on stage with Bill Gates to introduce Ford Sync, the original version of Ford Sync, and that part of that was using a version of Microsoft Windows, an embedded version of Microsoft Windows in Ford vehicles as an operating system for the infotainment. But that's not what you do anymore, is it?
So our areas of focus right now, Sam, spans the entire breadth of what we call as the intelligent cloud and intelligent edge. So think of this in terms of technology automakers would need to build the digital ecosystems for digital platforms they would need for their ecosystems. So we provide the hyperscale capabilities and the advanced AI capabilities via the intelligent cloud, and also help them execute those within the vehicle through the intelligent edge. So that's the focus the team has. So it's evolved quite a bit since the times you mentioned. And cloud and what we do with AI is a pretty significant part of the business that we are in today.
And what sorts of applications would companies be using your cloud platforms for? I know one area certainly is simulation, which has become increasingly important. But can you talk in a little more detail about some of the sorts of applications you see your customers doing with automotive or transportation?
Absolutely. So we go across five key areas in the mobility space, right? Starting off with what we call as the vehicle innovation space. So when people are driving connected vehicles, autonomous vehicles, or even software-defined vehicles that we are involved in right now, we are bringing in a number of key capabilities, technology capabilities folks would need to drive their connected services at scale across the world. So that's one big area of focus. And when we talk about autonomous development, supporting the autonomous development tool chain, and also working with partners, we have a very rich set of partners in this, you mentioned simulation, in the simulation ecosystem. that are delivering their services on top of Azure and our high-performance compute and storage capabilities. So supporting the industry to get to drive those simulations at hyperscale and the speed that the industry needs today is a big focus for us as well. So all that comes under the bucket of the vehicle innovation space. Software-defined vehicle is also part of that. We are actively contributing to the Eclipse Foundation right now as part of their software-defined vehicle working group. We truly believe that the ecosystem needs to come together and drive innovation in an open way. And that's our approach with Eclipse Foundation as an example around software-defined vehicles. So those are all examples of how we are engaged in the industry and bringing the breadth and scale of Microsoft from a technology standpoint. Then we go into the resilient operation space. You know, all of us are going through a tough environment today with supply chain disruptions. And it's all the focus is all about how can we do more with less. And areas like manufacturing efficiency, supply chain efficiency becomes key. So we work in that space with a number of different players in the industry, including partners like Blue Yonder and others. We have our own capability from a supply chain platform standpoint. And a good example of that is the work we are doing with Daimler, and I'll actually nick that part and I'll repeat that. A good example of that is the work we are doing with Mercedes as part of their MO360 effort. We are working with them on the factories using AI and data capabilities that will help them reduce about 20% of the cost as part of their manufacturing and operations. So again, very important spaces where technologies like digital twin, IoT, and AI apply to bring those efficiencies on the factory floor can unlock a lot of value for customers today. Then the third area we focus on is around customer experience, where there's a lot of excitement going on today in terms of how can you support the entire customer buying process with AI and context-specific offerings, but also with immersive experience through mixed reality and the metaverse. In fact, the whole metaverse is an area that we are deeply engaged in across the customer, but also the industrial side. On the customer sales and marketing side, and a good example is the work we're doing with TouchCast. TouchCast is a partner of ours that are bringing in very deep immersive experiences through what is called as a metaverse showroom. In fact, they just launched that with Fiat 500, where Fiat is using this technology to provide a very immersive experience to people who can actually sit in their living room and get an immersive experience of the car and then interact with someone in the dealership or from a concierge service through Teams who can walk them through the different aspects of the vehicle and do this entire workflow in a virtual immersive way. So that's, again, an area that is evolving quite rapidly. And there's a lot of hype around metaverse, but we are starting to see a lot of very practical use cases that are already coming to production. And so I touched on this from a sales marketing standpoint, but it's also on the industrial side. We are working with customers like ZF and Toyota, where they're using capabilities like HoloLens and Dynamics 365 guides to help their employees do very complex operations in the factory and be supported by remote technicians or remote experts who are not sitting in the factory. So those are all use cases that we are investing quite a bit today and also going to help people get more done with less resources. Then we get into the whole organizational productivity space that Microsoft has a lot of focus on. And this comes across all the traditional communication and collaboration aspects of things. But one thing we are really seeing a lot of traction in the mobility space is to help end users build their own business processes in an agile way. And this is where capabilities like Power Platform come to play. And folks can create new business workflows very quickly and then implement them without needing IT and very deep investments on the technology side. So in some ways, how can you democratize the usage of technology by people who are actually using the technology in companies? In fact, at ZF, we are working with them. They have about 10,000 plus applications created by their end users to support the business needs they have, and they can quickly change those processes based on the needs of their customers. So that kind of gives you a glimpse of the areas we are focused on, and the data becomes central to all of this, and supporting the emerging mobility services also is a critical area that we are involved in. So that's maybe a few different examples for you, Sam, in terms of how we are engaged with the industry and the technology that we are bringing in to meet the needs of mobility.
So just to follow up on a couple of those, for example, yesterday I was speaking with an executive from one of the automakers, and I'm not sure if they're a customer of yours in this area or not, but we were talking about, you know, the state of the supply chain disruptions, because, you know, consumers for the last almost 2 years now have had a really hard time buying vehicles because manufacturers can't build enough of them, because they're often parts, you know, random parts that they can't get for a wide variety of reasons. And it started off with the chip shortage, but that ultimately ended up, the way he explained it to me was that ended up exposing a lot of other weaknesses in the supply chain. You know, that was what kicked it off, but it wasn't the only thing. And now it's all kinds of different parts that, you know, become unavailable for various reasons. And one of the things he mentioned was that they have had to work to increase their transparency. Traditionally, automakers have focused on working with their tier one suppliers, their top level suppliers that integrate parts from the lower tier suppliers into systems that they provide to the automakers and put into the vehicles. And the automakers typically didn't look too deeply into what the tier two, tier three, tier four suppliers were doing. Are the tools that Microsoft provides, are those the kinds of tools that can help an automaker get better visibility into what their entire supply chain is doing?
It's definitely a core part of our focus, Sam. So if I were to just highlight an example of the work we're doing already with Daimler Trucks North America, and this is something they had announced recently. So they're using our supply chain platform, and they, you know, for them, with all the disruptions that is going on in the industry, they need to be in a position to address their customers' question, right? When will the truck be available and arrive? And of course, they, as Daimler Trucks North America, is dependent on a lot of the supplies they're getting. And even if few of the components are missing, that's going to impact their delivery date. So getting visibility of all the inbound supply and then looking at the dependencies to make that commitment to the customer is critical. And this is where we work with them. And the supply chain platform provides them the visibility they would need so that they can address issues that come up and also be in a position to provide very definitive answers to their customers. Now, one thing I want to highlight is Microsoft truly believes that this is an area where we will have a set of capabilities through the supply chain platform, and we work closely with our partners. There are a number of supply chain partners who have very deep optimization capabilities, and so we work very closely with those partners as well to meet the end customer needs.
Okay. Another thing you mentioned was Metaverse and the recent Fiat announcement of some work they're doing there. Can you dive into that a little bit more? And, you know, I mean, I think these days when people think of Metaverse, one's making the most noise about Metaverse, and it's usually around VR goggles. With what Fiat is doing, are we going to have to get a set of VR goggles to shop for a car in the future?
It's a great question, Sam. The quick answer is no. You all you need is a browser to get that Metaverse experience, right? So so if you look at the space from a technology perspective, there are a lot of capabilities that start playing into it. And one, of course, is a immersive experience that can be provided through a technology like HoloLens. And in fact, we have an example where in the dealerships of Daimler, they have provided HoloLens to their service technicians. And this is a real life example where those service technicians can put on those HoloLens and navigate some very complex repair and maintenance operations. And where they're not clear, they can, through Teams, call an expert who might be sitting in Germany or Nashville or someplace, and then start showing them the problem that they're trying to address and get help and guidance. And the person sitting on the other side is seeing that immersive view as well, right? So, and it might be through a browser or through the Teams application. And this is a fantastic example of how Metaverse is enabling a very immersive interaction, solving complex problems that has the potential to completely revolutionize how people do their work, right? Because you're now able to get very deep experts to engage with you from remote locations to solve hard problems. From a sales car sales standpoint, the example I mentioned with a Metaverse showroom, you could have a Metaverse showroom. And in fact, that's what we're going to share at CES, where you can come in and it's a showroom with a few walls. And through that, you get a very immersive experience of a car. And people can understand different features in much depth and then make those decisions. You could also get a very similar experience by sitting in a living room through a browser, where on the other end, you get to interact with someone on a concierge side who can walk you through very specific features a vehicle would have, and again, present it to you in a three-dimensional way. So these are all examples of what I'm excited about the space is we are getting rid of a lot of constraints. So when you are in a Metaverse showroom physically, you can have a deep, enriched experience. When you're sitting in a living room, you can have a much more deeper experience than what you can today by looking into a browser. So those are all the things that we see evolving from a Metaverse standpoint. And the last thing I do want to highlight, I mentioned earlier, is the industrial Metaverse in use cases like the factory floor. Because now with digital twins, you're able to digitally represent a lot of the physical capabilities. And on one side, you can do a lot of simulation of different configurations of the factory floor and the machines and others on the digital side. But with capabilities like Microsoft 365 Remote Assist and HoloLens, you are in a position to go through complex operations, training people, training new employees with the experts not being in the factory. They can be anywhere in the world and train new employees on doing the maintenance and the repair operations in a very sophisticated way. So those are all the use cases that are being unlocked with Metaverse today.
I think going forward, as manufacturers start to introduce a lot more EVs and a lot of new types of vehicle architectures, that type of virtual training and support environment is going to be increasingly important to help the technicians in the shop understand how to fix and diagnose problems that they may not have seen before. So I think we'll probably see a lot more of systems like HoloLens and other devices, whatever is coming next in the coming years. As long as when we're buying our vehicles online in the Metaverse, we don't have to go into a virtual F&I office and try to fight off the F&I guy that's trying to sell us extended warranties.
Now, I think this is the beauty of this is, the end consumer is in control and everything is available for them. And in fact, there were some studies that have been shared where when people make their decisions by themselves, they actually buy more accessories than going to a dealership because they don't feel like people are pushing accessories on them. It is for them to go pick. And it's a fascinating piece of research that I saw recently, where even opportunities for OEMs to upsell, it's more in these more immersive virtual environments. The piece I would highlight is also the, take a pause there. I lost my train of thought. So we'll next it, Sam. We'll move forward.
Okay. Another thing a couple of years ago here at the American Center for Mobility, which is just a few miles away from where I'm sitting, they made an announcement of a partnership with Microsoft And I don't know, can you talk a little bit about what Microsoft is doing with ACM, which is a facility is to I think a public-private partnership that provides a place where automakers and suppliers and researchers can come in and test automated and connected vehicles and other advanced technologies. What is Microsoft providing there?
So I think what we are providing there, Sam, is the cloud technologies that they would need to support a lot of the workflows and the data analysis capabilities that they would need for those whole autonomous workflows. And this is a good example of how we are engaging with the market, because Microsoft is working with a number of different organizations like ACM. So we can bring in a different ecosystem players together and drive innovation as part of a larger partner ecosystem. So the work I mentioned to you about the Eclipse Foundation is another example. Here we are part of the working group for software-defined vehicle, and we are bringing our own capabilities that will be open source that the community can use. In the case of ACM, they leverage the Azure cloud platform to support their ecosystem players and partners.
Okay, one last thing I want to ask you about, because we're about out of time. Are there any other things at CES, you know, they said coming up on the 16th anniversary of the Sync announcement, anything else that you're going to be announcing at CES that we should be hearing about?
So, Sam, we're doing some, you know, we've announced our partnership with General Motors several months back, and we'll be, you know, you'll be seeing how they're leveraging the cloud capabilities and as part of the Altify platform. Some really exciting work that is going on there that will be shared at CES. And you will see a lot more about the whole metaverse topic we just covered, coming from multiple dimensions, from the factory side, from a dealership side, from a sales and marketing side. You will see the work we are doing with the broader autonomous development platform. There will be a few of the simulation players you mentioned who will be there highlighting how they are driving efficiencies using the intelligent cloud and edge. So those would be all capabilities that we'll be demonstrating. The last thing I would highlight is, which is very topical right now, is doing more with less. So we have a number of customers there who would be talking about how they're driving supply chain efficiencies and manufacturing operational excellence using Azure and our data and AI capabilities. So ZF would be one of those customers there. And the last thing I would highlight is sustainability. So our industry contributes more to carbon than any other. And that's a big focus for Microsoft, you know, as part of our effort to drive a safer and more sustainable and productive ecosystem. We have the Microsoft Cloud for Sustainability that will be shared at the event as well, and how the mobility companies can leverage that to manage scope 1, 2, and 3 emissions and meet their own sustainability targets and goals.
All right. Well, thank you so much for your time today, Sanjay, and hopefully we'll get to talk again soon.
Great to catch up with you, Sam, and look forward to meeting you at CES.
All right. See you then. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming.
I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.